Welcome to AEW Unrestricted. Aubrey Edwards and Tony Schiavone here with another amazing guest. Just want to point out that we did an interview with Mikey Ruckus. Not sure if it's airing before or after this one, but this guest has significantly more guitars in his frame. I don't know if that provides credibility as a musician or not, but I'm going to say it does. First off, how are you doing today, Tony?
Aubrey, I am great. It's great to be talking to you as always. We are such good friends. Not only that, we are co-workers, and it's great seeing you. The good news is that you and I, work on the Dynamite weeks, and then on the off weeks, a lot of times we do podcasting, so we get to see each other on a weekly basis, which is cool.
Yeah.
I'm doing great.
It's great.
Thanks for asking. It's great to be with you, and it's great to be with our guests at this time. Truly, truly one of my favorites to be able to call a match of his and be able to work with him because he is such a pro.
Frankie Kazarian. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, that's me.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay. I am doing well. I have a child doing distance learning in the next room. I have two cats clawing at the door to get in. I have a hydraulic jackhammer in my backyard, and I have coffee dangerously close to my laptop. So what could go wrong?
Nothing.
Happy to be here with you guys.
Oh, sounds man. Like a great day. Sounds like a great day. Okay, you are the self-described full-time metalhead, part-time Jedi, occasional Avenger.
Sometimes. Yes.
Sometimes. Okay, I get that. How good is your Jedi mind trick skills?
Well, after being in professional wrestling for 23 years, I've learned the art of BSing, which essentially is what the Jedi mind trick is, talking people into things that they don't want to do. So I would say at this point, it's pretty spot on, pretty good. Always a work in progress, though.
Very cool.
I mean, I think that means like everyone who's successful in wrestling ends up being a Jedi of some kind, right?
There's a very close correlation there, yes.
Mm. Oh, man. Wow, I just gazed over at Frankie's list of accomplishments, and this is just the highlights because there's way too many fucking to list. I'm going to try and go through this in one breath. I'm going to fail.
Okay.
Inaugural AEW World Tag Team Champion with Scorpio Sky, 2-time Pro Wrestling Guerrilla World Championship, 5-time TNA X Division Champion, 3-time TNA World Tag Team Champion, 2 times with CD, 2007 TNA Fight for the Right Tournament Champ, 2008 and 2009 TNA King of the Mountain Championship, 3-time Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champion, 2 with CD, 1 with Scorpio Sky, 1-time Ring of Honor 6-man Tag Team Champion with CD and Scorpio Sky, 2005 Future Legends Award from Cauliflower Alley Club, 2012 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Team of the Year with CD, and 2006 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Worst Worked Match of the Year for the TNA Reverse Battle Royal at TNA Oof. Impact.
Wow, what a great one to end on.
Yeah.
Woof.
Woof. Woof. Oh, yes. They failed to mention my 1988 Boys and Girls Club of the High Desert bubblegum blowing contest, which I placed first in. So
wow.
How dare you, Wikipedia.
The other one that's unmentioned a lot is your 2 out of 3 falls beer drinking competition with Adam Page from The Boat, which is one of the highlights and honors of my career to officiate.
We can get into that because you had the best seat in the house, and you saw everything go from fun to real in the blink of an eye.
Real bad. Ooh, real boy. Bad.
Frankie, you just had a match on television against Christian Cage. You called him top 3 best wrestlers you've ever been in the ring with. Why such high praise? And tell us why you think makes Christian. And first of all, what a match. Wow. What a way to start the program, by the way. What makes Christian so good, and why do you think you guys mesh so well?
First and foremost, thank you. Always a pleasure hearing that from you. And, you know, to this day, having you and JR call my matches is still, to a, you know, a small boy who grew up watching this, still surreal. So if I don't tell you enough, thank you very much for writing the lyrics to the music I give you guys. Uh-huh. Christian is, and I learned this the first time I wrestled him in 2007, a guy that has maybe the highest wrestling IQ that I've ever been in the ring with. And when I say that, I mean just having mastered professional wrestling, knowing what works, what doesn't, whether it be on the fly or just ideas he has in the back, just ring positioning, body placement, just little nuances, the things that go in between the moves that most people don't ever really get to see. The guy just has an outstanding mind for professional wrestling. I cannot sing his praise high enough. And I am so genuinely happy that he's here with us in AEW and gets to experience this company. Because as you guys know, Tony, you especially, AEW is so very different behind the scenes than any other wrestling company is or ever has been.
So it's amazing. One of the things that, I mean, we've said it time and time again, it had been 7 years since Christian Cage had last wrestled. And I think one of the things that you had said coming back through the curtain as we're all standing there, like just shocked about how great this match was, is I think you had said he never missed a step. Like it just felt like he had been wrestling this whole time.
Yeah. Not only did he not lose a step, he might be better than ever.
Whoa.
Which is unreal. He it was amazing. I don't know that I could do that. Seven years being away, I don't know that I could do that. Professional wrestling is such a very, very difficult thing to, first of all, to even have the courage to do. We put ourselves out there like nobody else does. And it's a difficult way to make a living. You know, the industry is tough. And, you know, I've been injured. I've been sitting on the shelf. The longest I've been out was 7 months, and that was with a torn tricep. And coming back from 7 months was nerve-wracking and physically taxing and mentally challenging. This guy's been out of the ring for 7 years. And to come back in that shape, to have that timing and that much focus, I don't know that I could do that. He's a special athlete. And I hope people realize now just how amazing and special Christian Cage is. You know, he's often been called one of the most underrated wrestlers there's been. And people have put that tag on me. And I always wear that as a badge of honor. If you're going to call me underrated, that's fine, because you've called a lot of my heroes underrated. Guys like Christian Cage, guys like Jerry Lynn, guys like Dean Malenko, Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude. Those are guys that are my heroes, Tito Santana. So I'll wear that with a badge of honor. And again, like I said, I can't sing his praise high enough. It's really amazing. And I hope people see the gravity of how special this is for him, for me, for AEW.
Listen, we're going to sing your praises too, because you talked about underrated, and there is no question. And I'll say this to the day I die. And Frankie, you realize this. All of us realize this. To make a great match takes two people. Mm-hmm. And so that was a tremendous match, not only because of what Christian Cage can do, but it's because of what you can do in the ring and the stories you can tell and how you conduct your business. So take that to heart. It was legit a great match. It's because legit we had two great performers in the ring. And so kudos for that. I want to ask you about signing with AEW. When did you consider this, or when did this all happen for you?
I was kind of in on the ground floor of all this.
Right.
Being very, very good friends with Matt and Nick, Cody, and, you know, getting to hear the rumblings early on, you know, really before the world knew about it. Only a handful of people knew about what, you know, the vision, the idea of what AEW was going to be. And hearing about this and knowing what the idea was and knowing what we wanted to do, not just for ourselves, but for the entire professional wrestling industry, I was on board before day one. It's pretty much all I can say. I was sold the minute I heard about the concept. Of course, when the first time I met Tony, was blown away just at his wrestling knowledge and just the courage he had and his vision and his foresight for what he wanted to do with AEW. And like I said, his courage just to take that first step. So I was in on the ground floor, which is why SCU was part of the announcement of AEW, that we, you know, were one of the first 9 guys to sign. So we were here from day one, and it was kind of a no-brainer for us.
You had mentioned first time meeting TK and just being appreciative of his courage and whatnot in doing this. Is there any sort of wrestling stat that he threw at you where you're like, oh God, how the hell does he know everything about me? Because he sort of does that for everyone.
Sure. Oh yeah. I mean, you know, he always just throws out like you know, like, oh yeah, when you worked Kurt, and he'll give me the exact date. You worked Kurt Angle for the title TNA, and I was like, yeah, I remember the match. I don't remember, and I'm pretty good with that because I've written down everything since day one, so I'm pretty good with that. But he knows it like to the T, just off the top of his head. But yeah, he can, you know, spout off angles that happened in Mid South with Jerry Lawler in 1983, and just get it's really cool because yes, he's my boss. Yes, he's a powerful man, but he's a wrestling fan, so it's really cool to sit with him at the end of the night and maybe have a beverage and just talk about wrestling like I would with my other pals. It's just cool.
You were on Being the Elite, and you mentioned that Being the Elite made SCU, and you also we want you to talk about the worst town ever.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so the bit was literally just Matt Jackson had the idea one day, and he said, we need to just film you guys, because every time we would pull into a town that was particularly dumpy, or, you know, somewhere
which is
that
a lot
was,
of towns in wrestling.
Right. Or somewhere that was cold. You know, we're all guys from Southern California, so we're climatized. So everywhere's cold to us. You know, we would be like, oh, this town sucks. God, why is it so cold? Look at this building. This is when we were on the road with Ring of Honor. And Matt would just go like, you know, I'm just going to film you guys one day. We're just going to get out of a car and we're just cut your promo like you do. Cause it was kind of, it wasn't far off from what we would really do. So we started doing that, and we just did it in every town we were in, and it caught on. And at the time we were heels, but after, you know, a month or two on BTE, the fans just thought it was so funny. So we came out and the fans just started giving us very positive reception. So instead of, you know, this is the worst town I've ever been in, boo, which is wrestling 101, you know, when you want to get that easy heel reaction, you know, this town sucks, boo. It turned into Scorp would hit that line and the place would say it with them. And it just started growing and growing and growing. And it was just like, this is weird. Like, we go out there, we bury the town and the place likes us even more, which I don't know how, I don't know if that had ever been done in pro wrestling.
No,
it's very unique.
You know, it was when you have the whole, you know, you guys remember when we were doing arenas, I know that sounds like years ago, but we would go and sometimes we'd do like, you know, either we'd do like a dark off camera stuff. And we go out there, we would do our bit and the, you know, 8, 10, 12,000 people saying, this is the worst town I've ever been in and popping. And so it was a weird phenomenon, and it certainly took SCU to a different plateau than we were on at that point.
I always found it weird because, like you said, you would come out and you would just rag on the town, and they go, "Yeah,
pro wrestling in the new millennium, man. It's just you never know what's going to work." I just thought it because it was so entertaining. Because Sky's delivery, you know, he hit the line perfectly every time. Mm-hmm. I would do my rant, which, you know, I became known for just. And then CD would throw in his one-liner like only CD can, and we just had our shtick, and it just worked.
The AEW Championship match on the tournament against the Lucha Brothers.
Oh.
Talk about that match, putting that match together, because that was really something. That was really a way to kick off, I think, a tag team division.
Thank you very much. Our tag team division was and is loaded beyond belief.
Mm-hmm.
The Lucha Brothers are such a phenomenal tag team. And just their style is spectacular. Rey Fénix is going to go down as one of the absolute best high flyers in the history of pro wrestling.
No question.
Absolutely.
And Penta, just with that innovation and that look. And those guys are so unique and unorthodox. Sky and I are, you know, yes, we can do some flying and stuff, but our bread and butter is our wrestling. You know, so there could have been a styles clash there, but the way that the match came together and just how professional those guys are. And the fact that the bigness of that match, the fact that it was the first ever AEW tag team championship match was huge. And that's not lost on me. I've been in this business a long time and there's not a lot of firsts to do, but to be the first ever AEW champion is something I'm so very proud of. I'm very proud of that match. I'm so happy of the body of work that Sky and I did. Our time as a team. And that was just such a cool way to kick off kind of my career in AEW and set the standard for what I want to do going forward.
How surprised were you when you found out that you were going to be the first tag team champions, knowing that all of the other tag teams that we had signed at AEW at that point?
Yeah, surprised is one way to put it. Honored, you know, championships in pro wrestling. People can call them what they will. Some people call them a prop. I will never call them that because for a promoter or owner of a company to put a title on a person, be it tag team or singles, that promoter, he or she has to have the utmost faith in that person or those two people that he is confident that these people are going to represent his company. So that's not lost on me. Being a traditionalist, that is never lost on me. So very, very honored. Because I knew what AEW was going to become, and I knew we were just going to continue to grow as we are to this very day. So I knew that being the first was going to be very special, and I was just thrilled, elated, and honored, especially when you look around at our tag team division at the time. It was, I mean, you have SCU, but you have the Young Bucks, you have Private Party, you have the Lucha Brothers, you have Jurassic Express, you have TH2, on and on and on and on. So just again, another huge badge of honor. Like this is so cool. This is the culmination of years of hard work, but just, you know, a look into the future of what the business is going to be. It's just real cool.
We're talking with Frankie Kazarian, a man of many talents, and we'll talk more about his talents in a moment. AEW Unrestricted, talking to one of our favorites, one of the real pros, one of the great wrestlers that we have. And we have many, but this is one of the best. Frankie Kazarian is with us. By the way, I am in the worst town in the world, by the way.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, everybody asks us all the time. Everybody asks us when meet and greets were a thing, what is the actual worst town we've ever been in? Mm-hmm. And our go-to answer was, it's a tie. There's SoCal, best town. Every other place on earth is tied for the worst town.
No, people say, hey, you live in Atlanta, don't you? I go, nope, I live in Marietta. And I love Marietta. So there you go. So I want to qualify it. I like the suburbs and I like the life away from the downtown areas. Although downtown LA is pretty cool.
It can be. Yeah. I'm out in the desert. I'm out by Joshua Tree. So I'm 2 hours out of LA. So I kind of got my own little slice of desert heaven out here.
Gotcha. We've talked a little bit about your match against the Lucha Brothers for the championship. You dropped the titles to Kenny Omega, Hangman Adam Page on the Jericho Cruise, a match that Sky said he got motion sickness in. What do you remember about that match?
Yeah, so the situation being on a boat was very unique, very cool. But what people may not know is that that ring had to be specifically made for that boat because it's on a boat. So it has to be, there has to be a structure built underneath to hold the ring in place. And so the ring was a little bit, or a lot harder of a bump. Mm. At least it felt like that to me. Okay. So the ring itself felt very just hard and solid. And the match, you know, those two guys, Kenny Omega, you know, what can I say? Hasn't been said. And Hangman Adam Page, one of my favorite opponents, one of the absolute best in the company, and a hard hitting son of a bitch. So that match was very, very physical. And we took a lot of risks. And I don't remember a whole lot of seasickness, but I just remember feeling like I had been hit by a truck afterwards. Just my back was killing me. The one time I needed the docs, and they weren't right there after the match. And I was like, where are they? Yeah, it was just a physically taxing match. And, being on a cruise and, you know, the Jericho Cruise, I didn't get a whole lot of sleep, you know, because I was up all night.
None of us did.
I was up all night. Yeah. Meeting fans it was draining and just, I didn't get the motion sickness until I want to say the next day, but the match itself was just brutal. And it was a long one, and just the environment, just being on a boat was just different and took some getting used to, but it was cool.
I think the ring was smaller too. That might've been why it hurt so much.
It might've been. Yeah. I think the ring might've been like just because of the specifications, specificity. Easy for me to say. Right. Yeah. It might've been a little bit smaller, and it was just the setup was kind of wacky, but hey, what can you do? Set up a ring. I'm going to wrestle there.
So outside of wrestling, you play bass in a couple metal bands, Gutter Candy, Vex Temper.
Yes.
Are you looking forward to playing live again?
I really am. I really, really am. You know, my band, Vex Temper, is kind of a band I just record with now. Gutter Candy is the band I would play gigs with. And, you know, we are playing, you know, anywhere from 2 to 6 times a month, just local bars, small clubs. It was something I really enjoy. Just another outlet for me creatively. I love the guys I play with. You know, we played like 80s and 90s, like rock radio stuff and a lot of originals. And, when that was taken away from us, our last gig, we played a gig at the Whiskey in LA, which was really cool. And that was one of our last gigs. And all of a sudden it was taken away from us. And it was just, I really miss it. And I hope that when, you know, we get back to normal, we're getting there slowly but surely, thank God, that people appreciate live music in every form, whether it be a band playing at your local watering hole or if it's giant concerts and stadiums. I hope people appreciate live music when we're back to being able to enjoy that type of thing.
Who or what got you interested in playing bass or playing live music?
So I've always been a fan of music. Grew up a huge rock and roll and heavy metal fan. And I wanted to play bass guitar and be a pro wrestler. So when I was right when I graduated high school, my grandfather, who lived in Las Vegas, was a musician and had learned that I wanted to play bass guitar. And he actually gave me my first bass guitar, which was a 1966 Fender Mustang bass guitar, which is a very valuable instrument. And I learned on that, and I was self-taught. I just learned how to, you know, learn by ear and learn to read tablature and started progressing a little bit. And like everybody else does, got together with buddies in the garage and started jamming and started to get decent at the instrument. But right around that time, professional wrestling took over. And when I started professional wrestling training, I was, when I say obsessed, I mean obsessed. I was consumed with the business. So the instrument kind of, you know, got put on the back burner. Years later, I picked it up and started to slowly but surely get into it again and basically just play along to songs, write stuff. And then probably about 10 years ago, when I moved back to Southern California, got back in touch with some guys and started jamming. And, you know, one thing led to another and, you know, formed bands and put out original material and started gigging. And it just, it's, so it's now been, you know, 25 years since I started playing.
Goes by quickly, doesn't it?
We're going to put over all of your outside ventures, but you've also got the American Rebel Cigars.
Yes, American Rebel Cigars. This logo right here, and that's one of the logos. Another passion of mine is I enjoy a good cigar, a fine cigar, if you will. When I first met Cody several years ago, found out that he also enjoys cigars, and we would, you know, have a cigar, we were talking, and, you know, literally one of us just said, like, why don't we have our own cigar? Because at the time, Cody had his own wine out, and I was like, why don't we have our own cigar? We kind of would joke back and forth. And then one day we just kind of put it out there. We're like, well, let's see if we can get any interest in this. So we kind of put it out there on a tweet just to get some traction. And we had some people within the industry contact us, and one thing led to another. And here we are, we're looking at almost 3 years later, we got American Rebel Cigars. They, in the cigar community, everybody that has had them very much enjoys them. They're a very smooth smoke. A lot of wrestling fans have gotten turned on to them because of us. And it's cool. It's just another one of those passion projects, something we enjoy doing. We would do live events called Smoke and Mirrors. And we would basically be like a meet and greet with us hanging out, smoking cigars. And those are really cool. I'm looking forward to doing those again eventually.
You know, there's a lot of times, at least back when we were at the Hyatt, there would be some of guys smoking cigars out on the deck there. And I learned, because I'm not into it, but I learned that smoking a cigar is like an art, right?
Mm-hmm. It really is. There's a lot to it. I mean, there's a lot of similarities to people that are fine wine connoisseurs. You learn the notes, and you learn how to light it, what fluid to light it with. Sometimes you light it with a cedar plank, and you know, you get different notes. A cigar tastes different at the very beginning, the middle, and the end. And there really is a lot of sophistication to it. And I've learned this as I've gone. You know, it's taken me several years, and you know, being a, you know, cigar devotee. But yeah, it really is. It's therapeutic, because a good cigar will take you anywhere from a half an hour to an hour and change to smoke it. So I sit out on my deck, and that's kind of when I'm most at peace, you know, looking off into the desert, just thinking of everything and nothing at once. And that's really therapy for me. And I've also bonded with a lot of people, given my cigars to people, made a lot of friends. And it's just, it's a real cool community.
My favorite cigar is always the one shared with friends. I'm not at the point yet where I know all the different notes and stuff, but
no, but you have been out there, and I have handed you a cigar, and you have partaked and enjoyed. So you've been right there with us.
I'm very much a fan. Love it.
Awesome.
So you've got your first action figure coming out, available for pre-order. How exciting does that feel?
Really cool. You know, more so nowadays, it's cool for my son to have an actual action figure of me to beat up instead of the real me to beat up. I had an action figure come out in TNA, and that was cool at the time. But the weird thing was the image they used for my action figure was a look that I had for maybe a month. And I had, like, my gear sucked. my hair was weird. And it was just like the worst point of your career, like to like freeze frame and put into an action figure form. I was just like, ugh. Like it, part of me, when I saw it, it was like, oh, cool, my action figure. But I was like, ugh, like my hair, I looked like Biff Tannen from 1985 from Back to the Future. Just my gear sucked. It was bad. But looking at the prototypes of this one and the images I've seen, it's so spot on and so cool. And just the detail is rad. And it's the gear that Scorp and I won the tag titles in. And it's just so cool. It's just another one of those, you know, I kind of consider this my first real action figure just because the likeness is so cool. I'm so pleased with it. And it's so cool. It's another thing, you know, being somebody who's, you know, 20 plus years in the business now with a family of my own, it's not lost on me. Just these little things that maybe, you know, a decade ago would have been.
You also were on the Glow series, you and CD as independent wrestlers. How was that to shoot?
Very cool. It's funny you mentioned that. I was digging through some old stuff yesterday and I found my script, the Glow script. And it's, you know, a bound script. And it says, I still have the post-it on it. It says, muscular wrestler number 2, Frankie Kazarian.
Who's number one?
The CD, of course.
What? No way.
CD always gets top billing over me. Always. Yeah. Oh, man. And I'll let it slide because he's got seniority in the business and in age. But he's always got top billing over me. Someday I'm going to flip-flop that. But that was cool. That was an opportunity that came up and we jumped on it. We both have the benefit of living in SoCal and both of us are SAG-AFTRA card-carrying members. So, right. And we are obviously professional wrestlers. So they brought us down and it was really cool. An old friend of ours, Chavo Guerrero, is the wrestling coordinator on that show. And, so we got in there, we did our thing. It was really fun. You know, as goes anything in Hollywood, it's a lot of hurry up and wait,
right?
Do your stuff. But it was really cool. They kind of just let us put our own sequence together. Our scene was brief, but it was a cool experience. I've done a handful of like commercial and television and movie stuff. And this was one of the most positive experiences. And the show was so well received and so well done that all the wrestling fans were psyched to see familiar faces on it.
I remember when I was watching going, I think I know those guys.
Yeah.
I think I've watched them on other stuff. I don't know. And you did the whole Wikipedia search. You're like, shit. Yeah, I know those guys. It's awesome. They brought in actual like really awesome professional wrestlers. Just kind of give this moment like a lot of credibility. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. And you know, what's funny is the building that was filmed in, that was the American Legion Hall, where the famous one where PWG ran for years.
Yeah.
And that building, I've been wrestling in that building since the 90s. And that building also, fun little bit of trivia, in that very building, CD and I also filmed a bit for a show that was on Comedy Central, I think, called The Kroll Show, starring Nick Kroll. Unfortunately, our stuff never aired, which really bummed me out because I thought it was super funny. And if there's, I hope to God they release it someday because it was really good. But so I had a lot of history in that building, and that building sadly is no longer there. So it was cool to film that show in that building. That was also pretty special to me.
And you did the man show too, right? And you taught those guys how to wrestle?
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. And this was this was years ago. This is when I was still, I was wrestling. I was maybe a year or two into the business. And I was continuing training at a place called the School of Hard Knocks at the time, ran by Jesse Hernandez and Bill Anderson. And again, the benefit of being in Southern California and wrestling being white hot mainstream at the time, they were looking for schools and promotions in SoCal. So those guys came. And same thing, those guys came and they, you know, we set up bits, but we just kind of everyone riffed and we just kind of followed those guys' leads. And that was cool for me, especially at that time, being such a young guy in the business and meeting those guys who were blown up on the man show. It was really cool, fun, unique experience. Yeah, I got to do a lot of cool stuff like that. I was on Blind Date one time. They had a guy and a gal come in to learn how to wrestle. I was there. And I was also, funny story, I was offered a spot on Blind Date to be one of the datee guys many years ago, obviously. This is through UPW, which was Rick Bassman's territory out here. And they offered one of our girls and me a spot to be on Blind Date and to go out on a date. And when I was a much younger single man, obviously. And so I went and did the audition and, you know, talked about myself, you know, I'm Frankie. I'm a pro wrestler. I enjoy this and that. And I did the interview and they finished it up and they're like, okay, that was great. can you do another one? And I'm like, sure. And they're like, this time take your hair out, because I had long hair at the time. I was like, okay. And they're like, here, put this on. And they hand me this like super tight tank top. And I was like, okay. So I put it on and my hair is down. They're like, all right, now do another one. But this time kind of like do it like a bad boy. And I'm thinking like, but I'm not a bad boy. So I had to like do this
real terrible.
Yeah. So I did this, you know, it was like, yeah, I enjoyed going to the bar with, you know, like trying to be a fake bad boy. And anyways, long story short, they contacted me. They're like, all right, we want to send you out on their, on your date. And I just said, you know, I'm not comfortable with this. I think you got the wrong guy, and basically turned down the opportunity, but
yeah,
just wasn't. And again, I was so focused on pro wrestling. I didn't want to do anything that would tarnish my, good guy wrestler reputation.
Well, let's hear it for the realism of reality shows, huh?
Exactly. They were going to send some poor girl out on a date with a fake bad guy. She would have had a terrible time. Right. It would have been awful.
Good ratings, though.
We're talking with Frankie Kazarian, and we have fan questions for you, Frankie.
All right. I will answer questions from any fans. Ceiling fans, floor fans. So bad.
This is AEW Unrestricted. Tony and Aubrey here with Frankie Kazarian, the wonderful, amazing man and wrestler that he is. Lots of outside projects, lots of cool shit, lots of fan questions today. So
awesome.
Let's kick it right off. Jake Chavez on Twitter, how close were you to going to WWE before AEW? And how much did the Bucks and Christopher Daniels influence your decision?
Well, as I said earlier, you know, the minute the concept of AEW itself was pitched, I was on board. And, you know, we had a real tight bond, SCU and the Bucks, and also, you know, Cody and Paige, and we were all together all the time. So, and we were all kind of in on the ground floor of this, and it was just one of those things that comes along and you can't turn down. At the time, I was coming up at the end of my contract, and there was some mild talks, and those came about because I have several friends up there. One of them reached out to me and said, hey, somebody would like to give you a phone call. And I said, certainly, I'll take a phone call, and talked. And at the time, I really couldn't say much because, again, AEW wasn't a thing, you know, so I really couldn't say much. I was just like, oh, you know, there's some other, you know, so there's some other things going on. And they probably at the time thought I was going to stay with Ring of Honor or who knows what I was going to do. But I was like, oh, there's some other things. So I kind of danced around it, and I didn't really let the talks get serious because my mind was kind of made up. But there were certainly talks. You know, I'm a businessman, and I've been around long enough to know that you don't not take phone calls. So there was mild talks, and I have a lot of friends up there. I grew up watching WWE. So if it wasn't for WWE, I don't know if I would be the fan I am. So, but AEW for me was just, I could not pass it up. I could not imagine my life now if this wasn't around. I don't know what I'd be doing. It'd be weird.
Yeah, it's changed the lives of many of us. I know it could speak for me and Aubrey on that. So
yeah, it really is. You know, I say this all the time, and I say this to the younger guys, and Tony, you can attest to this, that it's not like this in other wrestling companies. You know, yeah. the camaraderie we have, the closeness, the way we're taken care of. Tony Khan treats us all so well. We're mm-hmm. treated like athletes, and we are fed, and we are taken care of. And it's just, I can't say enough good things. I've never felt more respected as a talent in any other wrestling company. And that's no disrespect to the other company I've wrestled for, but this is just on another level.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you 100% on that. Let's go to El Mustachio Saved, who's on Twitter. Just wanted to know how you came up with "Do Ya." It always cracks me up.
Okay, I will give you the. I will try to make this short as possible. I've told it before, but I will.
Okay, please.
So the origin of "Do Ya" is my first ever opportunity to wrestle a dark match for the then WWF. Probably because this was late '99 or early 2000, and the match was going to be a tag team match with me and another local guy, and we were going to wrestle Bob Holly and Crash Holly at the time, and I'm super nervous. I'm 20 years old, 21 years old, whatever it was. And so, you know, we kind of talk about the match, and there's this was different times. In fact, they were going to give us a promo for the dark match. We were going to go out there and challenge anybody to come out, and the Hollies were going to come out. Just, you wouldn't see that now. just give Wild. Two local schmucks a promo. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, so we're putting we put the match together and, you know, kind of standing there and gorilla waiting for it to start. And I'm nervous and I got this stuff called hot stuff sprayed all over me. And Bob Holly's right. just there and he's pumping up and Bob Holly's jacked to the gills. And he's looking around and he's like, who the hell's wearing hot stuff? And I'm just like, slowly back away, basically sprint back to the locker room, kind of hose myself off, come back, you know, sitting there waiting. And just there's the four of us there and he's pumping up and he has his bands and he's just pumping up and I'm right there next to him. And it's just, there's this real awkward silence. I'm thinking like, I should really start a discourse and like, you know, cause you know, just so we can get on the same page. And at the time I liked Bob Holly's entrance music. I thought it was good. It's real heavy. I loved it. So I just, Bob Holly's right there pumping up and I just look over and in my head, this is what I sounded like, a prepubescent teen. I just went, hey, I really like your entrance music. And Bob Holly just stops working out and looks at me and goes, do ya? And then continues working out. And I just kind of like go, yeah, it's real heavy. I like the riff. And my partner was looking at me like, and then so we got a break from those guys. Like those guys went away to talk about something. And he's like, you, Mark, why'd you say that? I'm like, I don't know. I just thought, oh, this is. So every time I tell that story, people laugh. And funny, I'll give you guys this one. I told Bob Holly that's because Bob Holly and I became very friendly on a tour of the UK. And he remembers this. He remembers that. But I tell him the story and he goes, you know why I said, do ya? And I go, no, I thought you were just being like, do ya, you, Mark? And I go, no. And he goes, because I liked it too, but I thought you were just screwing with me. And I go, Bob, why would I be, you know what I want to do before I'm about to wrestle Bob Holly? I want to mess with him. Yeah, right. I want to fire him up. So we joke about that. But so that's where do ya came from. So it's such a way to put someone in their place without swearing at them, without it's just do ya. And it just, there's no answer.
Yeah. Wow.
As I learned.
That is a tremendous, tremendous story.
Oh, it boy. Really is.
It's lasted the test of time. It's in fact, that catchphrase, I think is going to be my damn. What damn is to Ron Simmons, do ya is going to be to me. And I'm perfectly fine with that.
You already got it on a t-shirt. So you're halfway there.
Yeah. There you go. I like the fact you went back and hosed yourself off.
Oh yeah, because hot stuff. Because of course I'm doused in this stuff, and you know Bob Holly hates it, and of course I'm the poor sap that gets to wrestle him. So I'm like, well, maybe he will beat me less if I don't stink like menthol and whatever the hell else is in hot stuff. I don't know, but yeah. So I would basically hose myself. Cinnamon. Funny thing is that match that we were talking about actually ended up getting scrapped because of time. But I did end up wrestling Bob a couple times months and years later, just out here in SoCal in dark matches, and then proceeded to get a severe beating, but had fun matches because he's great.
And you didn't wear hot stuff at all when you wrestled him, right?
Probably not. I probably moved on to whatever I thought was the next like product that was going to make me look better than I should. Some form of oil or tanner. I've tried everything. If they put nuclear waste in a spray bottle, I would probably spray it on myself, especially back then, just to enhance my look.
Enhance.
Right.
All right. The Real Wrestling Show on Twitter asks, being one of the most impressive high risk, high flying moves I've ever seen, do you feel like using the flux capacitor now? And has it got harder to pull off as you've gotten older?
So that move is kind of my break glass in case of emergency move. That's something I did when my style was much more higher risk, which is odd because I was never really, really a high flyer, but I kind of got categorized as that when the X division started. You know, I always liked to classify myself as like a technician, like a Bret Hart, a Tito Santana, a Kurt Hennig, but I kind of got grouped into those guys. So I started doing a lot of that style and those kinds of things. And that move I did a lot more when I was a younger wrestler. As my style has evolved, I've kind of, you know, put that on the back burner because it's one of those moves that I really don't want to kind of prostitute out. I see a lot of really high impactful moves being done so often that they lose their importance.
Right.
You know, and so that move for me, when people see me hit that, it's like, wow, like I think I've hit that move. I want to say three times in the last 5 years, and that might be being generous. So the move is difficult to perform because it's another grown human being I'm doing it with, and it takes its toll on the guy giving it too. But I always have that in my back pocket. It's always a tool I have in the tool belt in case of emergency.
Going to music, Dylan Hager on Twitter wants to know, what are your top five metal songs?
Wow, Dylan, put me on the spot. Top five metal songs.
Put you on the spots.
Oh man, yeah, that's like asking what's my favorite breath of air. I don't know. The next one, this one, that one. I don't know. Let's see. Without giving it a lot of thought, and this list will probably change. Top five, right, I will say Master of Puppets by Metallica. I will say Raining Blood by Slayer. I will say Iron Man by Black Sabbath, because they are the inventors of heavy metal. I will say The Trooper by Iron Maiden, and I will say, oh boy, got to throw something in there by maybe Pantera, maybe Walk by Pantera. Off the top of my head, but my God, that's a tough one.
Joe Pro Wrestling on Twitter asks, can you tell us any funny stories from PWG?
Funny stories? Well, PWG kind of was one big funny story. Really, a lot of silly stuff, but I will tell you one that involves my old friend Scorpio Sky. So Scorpio Sky and myself had a year-long blood feud in PWG back in 2005, 2006-ish, 2007. Really, I actually asked to work with him because at the time he was fairly new, and I said, this kid's good. I'd like to do something with him. So we put together this year-long feud, and there was a lot of rumors going around about my hair, and like people were like, oh, I can't believe he left WWE because he wouldn't cut his hair, which was BS. That wasn't why. So to kind of prove a point, I had an idea. I said, Sky, I want you to cut my hair, like as an angle. And he said, oh, okay, that's great. And I said, I'll do a thing where you hit me with a chair and knock me out and cut my hair. And this is, let me preface this by saying this was before we knew what we know today about head trauma and chair shots to the head. Mm. Much younger, much more ignorant Frankie Kazarian suggested this.
Here we go.
So I told Sky, I said, so we did a match, and afterwards, I had my idea was I wanted him to hit me in the head with a chair twice. And I was telling him all day, I said, Sky, I want you to hit me in the head with this chair as if your life depends on it. I want you to absolutely swing for the fences. And I was going to have him hit me, and I was going to get up, and I was going to hit me again and knock me out, because I wanted to be out cold, because it's going to be real. Damn it. You're not going to cut my hair unless I was unconscious.
Oh, boy.
I'm badgering this guy all day. I'm like, make sure you bring that chair shot. Make sure you bring it. Make sure you bring it. So we get ready to do the thing. Sky has the chair. I turn around. Now, when I say he hit me hard, all I remember is him swinging it, the sound. And then I remember just looking at him going too hard and crumbling. And I was so out of it. And then Sky's in my face, and he's like he's looks like he's jaw-jacking me, but he's going like, oh, my God, are you okay? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And I stagger up because we were going to do two. The second one was, you know, gink, blink. So anyways, so he cuts my hair, and I was knocked so stupid, concussed, as we know today. You know, I know this sounds wildly irresponsible, but again, this was me much, much more ignorant. I remember being at a Jack in the Box on the way home, and all I remember is sitting there and the lady going, sir, sir, and just, yes. So what would you like? And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, I'm a Jack in the Box. Wow. And so, yes, that's a funny story. And yes, I know it's very scary also. Happy to say, in terms of like head trauma, that was kind of probably the last time I ever got my cage rattled like that. And thankfully so, because we now know what we do. And, you know, the training we've all had, it's very important to take that type of stuff into consideration. But I can talk about it now because it was funny. I'm perfectly fine. And it involves Scorpio Sky. And it was just, he was scared to death. Yeah. Anyway, it was ridiculous.
The funny part of that story is all day, lay it in, lay it in. And as soon as he laid in, you went too hard.
Because I'm badgering him, because I'm just like, I want to make sure. I was like, this better not look fake. Dude, you better, you know what I'm saying? And just, that's all I could think to, ting, too hard. That's all I could think. Just poor Sky.
like imagine the emotions running through it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and he's, like I said, he's a young guy in the business. And I was, you know, the respected veteran at the time. And So now we laugh about it. Like anytime Sky has a chair in his hand, I'll run in the other direction and he'll hit us. You know, even if he's just unfolding it to sit down, I'll run in the other direction. It's
great story, Frankie. All right, Frankie, thanks a lot, man. It's always a joy talking to you. You're one of the pros, man. We love your matches. I love calling them, and I'm really excited. I finally got to work with you too.
Likewise, Tony. Like I said at the beginning, man, it's, you know, it's never lost on me that you get to, that I get to have you call my matches. It's really, really cool. And it's really cool to call you a friend. And same with you, Aubrey. I'm so happy with your success. I remember first meeting you up there. Was that in Canada, Vancouver somewhere?
It was Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. And, you know, seeing your potential and seeing what you're doing now and how you're just killing it and how you've broke those barriers for females. It's really cool to see, man. So I'm happy to be on the show and happy to talk to you guys.
It's welcome full circle.
Heck yeah.
All right. Frankie, you can follow him on Twitter at Frankie Kazarian and on Instagram at Frankie Kazarian _official. And don't forget to subscribe to our AEW podcast for free, wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget about the AEW casino game.
That's
right.
Right. It's available on the iOS store, Google Play store. Bunch of casino games all in a single app. You can play with your friends. You can play with me. You can take all of my money because I'm not actually good at poker. Download it today. Support AEW games.
Absolutely. And don't forget, you can check out the video of this podcast on YouTube. And as always, there is Dynamite each and every Wednesday night on TNT, 8 o'clock, 7 Central.
I'm Aubrey Edwards, here with Tony Schiavone.
Yeah, I'm Tony Schiavone. And this has been Frank Kazarian. And this has been AEW Unrestricted.
Hell yeah.